Time being 9:37 a.m. on August 27, 2021. Let's call this FPLAC meeting to order. I appreciate everyone being here this morning. I do. And we're sorry for the little mix-up, but I think looking at the number of participants, I think that email that Lauren sent out has worked. And I think we have a lot of people online. I appreciate that very much. So I want to welcome everyone this morning. Let's start with introductions. And we're going to do this a little bit. Normally, when we're in the room, we introduce everybody, allow everybody to introduce themselves. Let's go through the commissioners. And we have some special guests with us this morning and staff. So let me just start again. I am Tillamook County Commissioner Dave Yamamoto, Chair of the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and the Forest Trust Lands Advisory Committee. John Sweet.
I'm John Sweet, Vice Chair and Coos County Commissioner.
Thank you, John. And so position one, Tillamook County on the Board of Directors would be Aaron Scar. Aaron apologizes. She is going to be about 20 minutes late for this meeting, but she will be here. Position two was Clatsop County. Courtney?
Courtney Bangs, Clatsop County Commissioner.
Welcome. Thank you. Position three, which includes Clackamas, Columbia, and Washington counties, the Board of Directors member is Margaret Magruder from Columbia County. Margaret?
Good morning. Margaret Magruder, Columbia County Commissioner, confirming my existence by participating in this meeting.
Good morning, Margaret. Pleasure. Glad you're here. Position four, which includes Benton County, Lincoln County, Linn County, Marion County, and Polk County. The Board of Director member is Craig Pope from Polk County. Craig?
Good morning, everybody. Craig Pope, Polk County Commissioner.
Good morning, Craig. In position five, we have Coos County, Douglas County, Josephine County, Klamath County, and Lane County. The elected Board of Directors member is Coos County Commissioner Bob Main. Bob?
Good morning. Good morning. It was 75 here yesterday, as usual, from the banana belt of the southern Oregon coast.
Yeah, and you are in the banana belt. I mean, it's been much cooler, at least 10 degrees cooler on the north coast here. Pacific City has been mid-60s. I'll have to come visit you.
And in the wintertime, it's, you know, high 50s, low 60s.
Yeah.
And not freezing most of the time. So, hey.
There you go.
I think Bob got temperature and wind speed mixed up there.
That's kind of true. It is. So before I am going to ask for other commissioners that are on the line, but I do want to start. We've got some very special guests with us this morning. Board of Forestry Chair Jim Kelly. Jim?
Yeah, I'm here. Welcome.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it very much. And we're going to give you an opportunity to address us in just a minute. We also have Acting State Forester Nancy Hirsch. Nancy.
Good morning. Nancy Hirsch here, and pleased to see many of you that I've worked with in the past, and look forward to being able to participate in your meeting today.
Thank you so much for being here also. And again, we'll allow you some time to speak in just a couple of minutes. I do want to make sure that we recognize Lauren Smith, AOC. Lauren?
Good morning, everyone. Good to see you all.
Good morning. And your position, Lauren, with AOC?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I am the Natural Resources Legislative Affairs Manager, and I also serve as the Director of the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties.
Thank you, Lauren. And I think Mark Rasmussen is on the line. Mark?
Hi, I'm Mark Rasmussen from Mason, Bruce, and Girard. And I want to introduce to you Mike Buffo, the newest member of our team. Mike, wave your hand there, Mike. Mike comes to us from Washington DNR, where he ran the their inventory and planning division and recently worked a great deal on the HCP for the marbled murrelet and their revision to their forest plan. So he brings a lot of experience and insight that I think will be very helpful to you all.
Thank you. And Mark, are you there? Can you wave and say hello? Introduce yourself.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm Mike. Good to be here.
Thank you for being here. And so we did get the sad news that Mark Rasmussen is considering retiring at the end of this year, although he will be part-time with Mason Bruce and Gerard for at least another year after that, bringing Mike up to speed. We've had some interaction with Mike, and I think he's going to be a great addition here. But we're not sure we're going to let loose of Mark Rasmussen just yet, but we'll see how this goes.
Very kind. Thank you.
Thank you. And Liz Dent, Liz.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Liz Dent, I serve as a State Forest Division Chief, and it really is good to have us all together. Apologize for the mix-up this morning, but we're up and rolling.
Things do tend to happen. And before we go into other commissioners that are on the call, are there members of your staff that you wanted to introduce?
Yeah, I would. The folks, there's quite a big group here, which is great. I think that should send the message to y'all how important this work is and how important our relationships are with the commissioners. But I will ask a few folks that are directly engaged in the agenda today to introduce themselves. So Mike Wilson.
Good morning, everyone. Mike Wilson, Acting Deputy Division Chief of Policy for the State Forest Division.
And Sarah Lathrop.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sarah Lathrop, and I serve as the FMP and IP Project Manager. Nice to be here.
Danny Norlander.
Good morning. I'm Danny Norlander. I'm the Forest Carbon and Forest Health Policy Analyst in the Policy Analysis Unit of the Partnership and Planning Program at ODF.
Thank you, Danny. And is John Tkarsak here yet?
I'm here, Liz. John Tkarsak. I'm the interim director of the Planning and Analysis Unit. Thank you.
Thank you, John. John's iPhone. I see your name tag there. So,
yeah.
And then we've already introduced Nancy and Chair Kelly. So I think that's good for us on the ODF side.
Thank you so much. I do want to get to other commissioners. I don't believe we have any other commissioners from Tillamook County. How about Clatsop County? Any other commissioners from Clatsop County?
Oh, David, here I am, Leanne Thompson.
Leanne.
And back in the day, I enjoyed the favor of Neil and Arlene Kelly. So Kelly's a good name for me.
Thank you.
Well, back in Portland, dear people.
They were good parents, too.
Thank you.
Pretty
for being
sure.
Do we have anyone from Clackamas County? How about anyone else from Columbia County? Anyone from Washington County? How about Benton County? Lincoln County? How about Lynn County?
Good morning, Will Tucker from Lynn County.
Hey, good morning, Will. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Anyone else?
Good morning. Kevin Cameron from Marion County.
I was just going to get to Marion County. Thank you for being here, Kevin. Appreciate that very much. Anyone else from Marion County? Anyone else from Polk County? We've got two commissioners from Coos County. Is Melissa Cribbins on the line? That would make a quorum.
Might as well make it three, Melissa.
Actually, two's a quorum. Melissa, you are here. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you this morning? Thank you for being here.
Good. Wi-Fi is a little sketchy. Sorry about that.
Thank you for being here. Anyone from Douglas County? Anyone from Josephine County? Anyone from Klamath County? Last but certainly not least, anyone from Lane County? Very good. Those are the commissioners that are present. And I know there are other members of the audience, and we're going to ask you, please, to introduce yourself in the chat so that we know who is here. Although I'm sure all of these names that are listed here would be captured. We have one phone number that I see. And if you would like to introduce yourself, I don't know who it is. It's the 503 number and 509.
This is Seth Barnes. I'm gonna only be able to be on for a little bit though. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate that very much. Okay, so one housekeeping item. We've got a lot of people online right now, and so we're asking everyone to please keep your microphone muted unless you are speaking. I would appreciate that very much. Before we go much any further, we're going to ask for any public comment. Is there any public comment? Hearing none. I am going to turn this over to Jim Kelly, Chair of the Board of Forestry, for some initial comments. Again, Jim, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Oh, thank you, Chair Yamamoto, and thank you for having me. Well, first of all, I'd just like to say that speaking for the board and ODF, we're really glad that you guys are having a meeting. And you guys are a super important stakeholder. And so having this meeting and being able to hear your advice is very useful to us. One of the things that I've learned since I've been on the board, you know, we have a number of different advisory committees. That sounds like it's a one-way street that you guys talk at us. And sometimes that's the way it is with the advisory committees. But what I've really learned is that much of the value out of these advisory committees is the communication back and forth. And the fact that you all get a better understanding of the challenges that we face and are able to take that back to your community. So I really appreciate the relationship. I did want to talk a little bit about the fact that we are going to be spending time today talking about climate change and the carbon report specifically. And, when I think about climate change for the Department of Forestry, and we have so many challenges, and then we've got climate change on top of it all, and it is not easy. And as I look, as I look forward, this is going to be a priority for the department. It's going to be a priority for the board. There's no way we can turn our backs on it. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our children to face all of this head on. In the short term, there's none of us who are going to be able to be in a position where we don't have to make sacrifices, I think. And in the long term, of course, it's the hope of all of us that the sacrifices we make are smart ones, that they are fair, and that they result in a good future for our children. Anyhow, I think that's all I've got right now, and I look forward to spending the next couple hours with you guys as we discuss all of this. Thanks again for having me.
Kelly, thank you so much for being here. We do appreciate it very much. And your attendance here is welcome, and we want you to hear what we're talking about. At the same time, we want to hear from you. So, again, appreciate you being here very much. So, Acting Forester Nancy Hirsch. Nancy.
Well, good morning. Echo what Jim said, good to see all of you, and especially for those that I've had the opportunity to work with in the past. Many of you I haven't met, and certainly appreciate having the opportunity to meet you here today. I also want to recognize that many, if not all of you, certainly all of you are at the tip of the spear managing in your own counties the challenges of living and working in this pandemic. And appreciate and respect your leadership throughout this time and continuing forward. As you can tell with me being here, that means a continued transition for the Department of Forestry. And you know, in case you haven't been tracking closely, the board's recruitment for the up and to be determined next state forester is out on the street and has been for a while. That I think will be close to wrapping up towards the end of the month, or excuse me, the end of October. Also on the forefront of our minds is obviously the fire season, and many of you have been impacted significantly, and there's still a lot of fire out there on the landscape, which poses a continued level of risk until we really see serious rains. State Forest, the State Forest Division body of work remains important to the department, and our support of that working for the Board of Forestry, both the Forest Management Plan as well as the Climate Change and Carbon Plan. That body of work will remain important and as a top priority. But I did want to touch briefly, perhaps since, you know, I know I haven't engaged with you directly much since my arrival, and primarily because we have, as of July 1, a new legislatively adopted budget. And with that budget, the department received a lot of new programs, a lot of expectations, as well as the Board of Forestry. And I wanted to be just briefly touch on some of those, both the budget and the body of work. On the budget side, it was really the largest investment in dollars that's probably ever come to the Department of Forestry at one time, as well as the number of positions that we received. The overall budget equates to a 26% increase, and we have over 186 positions added. About 90 of those come as a permanent full-time. The remaining would be in our seasonal, primarily firefighting positions. But many of those investments, as I said, come with expectations, and the Board of Forestry is heavily engaged already. Up number one was an expectation of defining the wildland-urban interface within 100 days. Right on the heels of that and already underway is to work on rules related to a wildfire risk map. There will also be rulemaking associated with a certified burn program, and also rules related to baseline fire protection standards. We are also have a program where we're investing and expanding in the detection program, the detection program camera investment. Those are basically fire detection cameras. We received about $20 million to deliver during this biennium related to the wildfire risk reduction program, as well as to develop a 20-year strategic landscape resilient plan. And we all know we're still in fire season. It's been a significant season. And I know you have a full agenda, but wanted to take this opportunity to share that while we have this grand opportunity over the next 2 years, wanted to be clear that folks here and the Board of Forestry, their support has been excellent. In the recognition of the body of work, and that all that to say, ultimately, the state forest work is one of those competing priorities, and we're committed to keeping that work on track. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your engagement.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you for addressing us. Thank you for being here. I look forward to the day that we can get back to in-person meetings again. That would be great. Right now, unfortunately, I don't see that as a possibility anytime soon, but we'll see. Thank you for being here. I'm going to put John Sweet on the spot. John is the vice chair of Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and FPLAC. John, any opening thoughts?
No, I have not.
That's short and sweet, isn't it?
I think we're going to be long enough.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it very much. So again, I am Tillamook County Commissioner Dave Yamamoto, Chair of the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties and FPLAC. Just want to thank everyone for being here. We as trust counties, we have several major issues before us. More than I can list, actually. Just recently, I think the issues and problems that we're looking at include the uplisting of the Marble Murrelet, which the staff at Oregon Fish and Wildlife I think they made it clear that there was not a reason to uplist the marble murrelet in Oregon. All the studies we see show that the population is increasing, and yet the board, ODFW board, decided that they would uplist the marble murrelet. That, to me, can be problematical. And then we're looking at three things, at least three things, with the Department of Forestry, one of them being the CCCP, the Climate Change and Carbon Plan. We have an HCP that is in the works, as well as an update to the Forest Management Plan. And if you look at all three of those, they all talk about greatest permanent value. And that is one of the things that I think is of concern to all of the trust counties. We have had issues with greatest permanent value in the past, and I think we're going to continue to see changes possibly in the definition of greatest permanent value moving forward. And again, I know all the trust county commissioners look at that and wonder how that's going to affect the financial position of all the trust counties and all the special districts within our trust counties. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. We appreciate everyone being here. So I just saw Commissioner Jerry Willey enter the room. Jerry, can you introduce yourself, please?
Thank you, David. Jerry Willey, Washington County Commissioner for District 4.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Jerry. Appreciate it very much.
Sorry I was late, David. I was in another meeting, so I had to jump into this one late. But thanks for letting me join there.
No problem at all. Appreciate you being there. So those are pretty much my comments. I know we do have a full agenda today. Is there anyone else out there that, especially any commissioners that have joined since we took we went through a roll call and wants to introduce yourselves?
Well, just so you know, I'm here. This is Washington County Commission Chair Catherine Harrington. Our representative to this committee is Commissioner Jerry Willey.
Perfect. Chair Harrington, thank you so much for being here. Appreciate it. Okay, so I guess that, so we do have one more piece of business. Approval of the May 28th FTLAC meeting minutes. Hopefully everyone has looked over those meeting minutes, and I would entertain a motion to approve or talk about any changes or corrections that need to be made.
Mr. Chair, this is Cameron. I'll move approval.
Oops.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
I guess it's probably easier if I ask for anyone have a problem with approving the minutes. Hearing none, we consider the May 28th FTLAC meeting minutes approved. Very good. Thank you. So let's get into our program. And here I'm going to turn it back over to Liz and let you determine how we move forward with the agenda.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. So I think everyone sees the agenda in front of us, or if not, I'll just hit the high points. Really falls into two categories. We're going to spend the next hour with John Tokarczyk and Danny Norlander leading up a conversation around the work of the department, specifically the climate change and carbon paper. You may have heard this referred to as the CCCP, in case we need another acronym. So that's a really important conversation. Board of Forestry Chair Kelly opened up with the comments really pointing to the importance of this work for the agency as a whole and for the division. And then after that, about 45 minutes on updates on the Forest Management Plan and the HCP, we really want to kind of connect the dots for y'all to understand where processes and timelines overlap, because as Commissioner Yamamoto said, there is a lot going on at one time here, and try and make some clarity out of that for everybody. So with that, if there aren't any questions, I will turn it over to John and Danny. Okay.
And if I may, so if anyone has any questions or concerns, I know there is a raise hands. So it's under reactions. You can raise your hands Well, okay, if so, I raised my hand. And so we will take that down. How do I take that down? To kind of begin. Okay, well, whatever that is, we'll see if it'll come down. Okay, so yeah, if you do have questions, concerns, please raise your hand and hopefully it'll pop up. I'm used to Teams, Microsoft Teams in these meetings, and if there is a raised hand, it automatically pops up on the right-hand side of the screen. The person that raised their hand moves to the top, but I'm not sure that that happens here. So if you raise your hand and we don't recognize you, please just break in when there is an opportunity and we'll get to you. Thank you.
Chair Yamamoto?
Yes.
If you go to reactions, you can hit lower hand, put your hand down if you want.
Oh, thank you.
No problem.
I always need help. I do. Thank you, Lauren. Okay, so Liz, we'll turn it back over to you, or we'll turn it back over to John and Danny.
Yep, John and Danny.
Great. Thank you very much. This is John DeKarzik. I apologize for being off camera. I am in between medical appointments with children and was unable to dedicate this time for this, but that is okay because Danny has been the point and the lead on the climate change carbon plan work throughout the course of the work. And so I'm happy to turn it over to Danny to carry forward.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. So we'll work through the PowerPoint I have for this. Hopefully my internet is up to it today. So everyone should be able to see the title slide there, I hope. Yes, good. Okay. So we are going to discuss the climate change and carbon plan today. There's more information about this on our website. It's under the forest benefits bucket under the climate change page. We also have our forest carbon accounting framework as a page there as well. They are separate pages if you are interested in seeing our forest ecosystem carbon report, our harvested wood products report, or the sawmill energy report, among other things. They're all on our forest carbon accounting page. So a little bit of background to start off with. OEF has been involved with global warming and climate change since about 1990, starting off with the Oregon Task Force on Global Warming report, which staff from the Forest Health Unit participated in primarily. Later on in the 90s, the Climate Trust was founded, and the Forest Resource Trust was established, both through legislation. Moving into the early 2000s, House Bill 2200 passed in 2001, and that provided the department with a variety of things, including the ability to develop a forest carbon offset program that would go through board rulemaking and things like that, as well as included carbon sequestration as an ecosystem service for the Forest Resource Trust. And allowed us to use funding as a flow through there. In 2003, there was a revision of the forestry program for Oregon that moved more towards using the Montreal process and embedding climate change into that document. In 2005, we had the Forest Biomass Work Group. And then in 2007, legislation created the Oregon Global Warming Commission, which the agency, the department has been involved with since that time. In 2008, the department hosted a meeting at the request of the Global Warming Commission around climate change, global warming, and forestry. Moving into the early teens, the state issued the first climate adaptation framework, and that has been revised and was released earlier this year after 10 years of having the initial one. The last revision of the forestry program for Oregon was in 2011, and with that, climate change became even more embedded in that. And then in 2013, the Board of Forestry approved a climate change section for its work plan. So those of you that aren't familiar with the way that the board and the Department interact is we have work plans that kind of lay out the work that we do on about a two-year basis, and climate change had its own established in 2013. 2015 saw the board adopt climate change recommendations in and those kind of became an addendum to the forestry program for Oregon. And then in 2019, the department finished the Forest Ecosystem Carbon Report, which provides an assessment of flux and storage and sequestration in the forest. And then that was followed on by the more recent work of the Harvest of Wood Products Report, which was released earlier this year, as well as the Sawmill Energy Report. And allows for a full kind of picture to be formed of wood products from, you know, in putting them in the ground all the way through to harvest and then out the gate of the mill. And then in 2020, so last year, the department was provided a request from the governor's office through Executive Order 2004 to develop a report on its climate change actions and statutory authorities. And then followed on with that was the request from the governor's office to develop the climate change plan. And that's where we are today. So as I mentioned, legislative efforts over time include developing the Climate Trust in 1997, the HB 2200 in 2001, and including sequestration as an environmental service. In 2007, establishment of the Global Warming Commission and the Oregon Climate Change Research Institute. So recently, 2019, House Bill 2020 provided cap and investment mechanism across state government to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions and utilize natural climate solutions as alternative compliance mechanisms. That one did not make it out of that session. And then following that was HB 1530 in 2020, which was very much modeled off of HB 2020 previously to that, and did also include natural climate solutions as a compliance mechanism. Also did not make it out of session. So in March of 2020, Governor Brown signed Executive Order 2004, which tasked ODF amongst various other state agencies to put climate change kind of front and center in its planning and operations. So I think that there's 13 other agencies, boards, and commissions identified within the executive order, so we're not alone in this one. It does outline many requirements for the state agencies, including reports that were due in May of 2020, and the department submitted at that time, and a variety of other things, including participating with the Global Warming Commission on developing a goal for natural working land, which is in the final stages of drafting and going through that process. And I believe a final recommendation report will be out soon. So following the May report that we submitted to the governor's office, they did request that ODF draft a climate change plan. That was really to embrace climate smart forestry and place Oregon forestry as a leader in the region related to addressing climate change. So there's a draft or a version of the letter there. It's also available online in various places. So if we look beyond Oregon, there are some tangential efforts and some more stuff from the federal side that has evolved since the direction to the department. With the shift in the administration, there's been a variety of things that have come up, including federal Executive Order 14008. Which is tackling the climate crisis at home and abroad. That was signed January 27th of this year. And it really emphasizes the role of agriculture and forestry in climate mitigation. And it also centers climate smart forestry and agriculture, which is throw in another abbreviation, which is CSAF, in the USDA work. So that's meant to provide the USDA mechanisms and the ability to work on climate adaptation and mitigation, among other things, through their granting and through various programs that they put in place through NRCS, the Forest Service, and so on. Currently working its way at the congressional level is the Growing Climate Solutions Act, This has passed the Senate on a 92-8 vote. It's currently in the House, and this would allow the federal government to develop and provide technical assistance and funding abilities related to natural climate solutions, increasing sequestration on natural working lands, technical assistance around climate change and agriculture and forestry. The current ODF policy, it really falls onto the Forestry Program for Oregon. This is not a statute or a rule. It is the board's strategic document. It's meant to provide process and a foundation for establishing the board's priorities, policies, and provide the department guidance in its initiatives and planning efforts. So it really does guide our policy through across all of our divisions, whether that we're looking at private forest lands, state forest lands, the way that we interact with fire and things like that. So the Forestry Program for Oregon has been around since 1977. It does provide the mission, values, vision, goals, objectives, and more recently the indicators for the board and the department. Through those various revisions, it's gone from a relatively smaller document in the late 70s through a variety of increasingly complex planning processes to the version that we have in 2011. And we will be looking to do a revision of that with the board in the near future. And we'll talk about that more in a little bit. It really is meant to provide the vision over about a 20-year horizon, but also to be updated on a more frequent basis than that. So the intent of the Climate Change and Carbon Plan, as presented by the Governor's Office, the department will plan and position the department as a regional leader in climate smart forestry, meant to build on the work that was highlighted in the department's May of 2020 report, which is available on the department or the governor's website. We can also provide it to you if you'd like, but also puts in place expectations for accountability for the board, the department, both at the executive level and the staff level, in implementing climate smart forestry and addressing climate change through the actions and planning that we do. It does have a purpose, vision, and principles. The purpose is, as I just stated, to make Oregon forestry a leader in climate change mitigation and adaptation. The department will be a leader in promoting climate smart forestry policies and actions that achieve our vision by operationalizing goals, implementing actions, and measuring progress to achieve climate goals. The vision is that the Oregon Board and Department of Forestry will provide national leadership in climate smart and socially equitable forest policies that ensure climate health, resilient forests, and a viable forest products industry and vibrant rural communities. To support those, we have four principles. The first being that climate change is a serious threat. Second, Black, Indigenous peoples of color communities have been and continue to be some of the most climate impacted communities. Third is that Oregon's forest sector offers opportunities for significant sequestration and storage, both in the forest and in harvested wood products. And then the fourth is that as climate change, we'll need to do adaptive management and planning across ownerships of various types, sizes, and management goals. So the need for a plan, and this was reiterated in the recent IPCC report, the first part of the AR6, the assessment report 6, really shows that we are in a time of changing climates, and we can expect that we will be warming throughout the coming centuries, really. So climate change is threatening Oregon's forests and forest products industry through increased severity and incidence of wildfire, drought, greater susceptibility to insects and diseases. And as we saw more recently this year, the impact of extreme heat, and that's been very visible throughout, basically from the coast all the way across the state, whether we're looking right down near the ocean, or up across the Coast Range, through the valley and up the Cascades. Everybody, I think, has at least seen some of the impacts of the extreme heat that we experienced this year. What is climate smart forestry? For the purposes of the climate change and carbon plan, climate smart forestry is anchored in sustainable forest management and evolved out of climate smart agriculture ideas in the early 2010s. It's important that it is anchored in sustainable forest management because that's where the forestry program for Oregon is really tied into this. The main parts of the forestry program for Oregon are emphasizing sustainable forest management. The framework for the forestry program for Oregon utilizes right now is the Montreal process, which really is for sustainable forest management. At its core, climate smart forestry has three main areas of forest adaptation, climate mitigation, and then a social dimension that includes community and the economy. And that community is both, you know, the local communities as well as those that are not bound by, you know, geographic or spatial extent. When we talk about forest adaptation, that's ensuring that our forests are resilient in the face of climate change and that we have trees and forest structure that will withstand the impacts of climate change into the future. Climate mitigation is really working to reduce the level of CO2, carbon dioxide in the air, and work to reduce the impact of climate change through that. There are eight main goals to the forestry, the carbon, climate change and carbon plan. I'll run through them here quickly. So the first is that climate smart forestry and silviculture, followed by fire management response and fire and smoke adapted communities. We have a goal on state forest management and forest lands, climate resilience and ecological function restoration, urban and community forests, reforestation and afforestation, maintaining and conserving forests. And then the last goal, which is more kind of the keystone goal, is research and monitoring. If we're not monitoring and testing how we're doing on the rest of the goals, we won't know if we need to partake in our adaptive management and move forward that way. So the goal for climate smart forestry and silviculture is to establish a just and equitable transition to climate informed silviculture and climate smart forestry that optimizes climate mitigation and adaptation while maintaining a sustainable flow of wood products to ensure long-term resource benefits and viability of the forest products industry and flow of long-lived forest products. So there is recent research that's come out that shows that there is definitely a benefit to providing forest products as a substitution effect for other things, and that's really where those long-lived forest products come into play. Next, fire management response and fire and smoke adapted communities is kind of a bifurcated goal. One is to modernize Oregon's complete coordinated wildfire protection system to respond to the increased severity of wildfire. And then the second part really relies on our relationship with our partner agencies and our sibling agencies, and that's to promote fire and smoke adapted communities in the wild and urban interface to mitigate the impacts of climate-induced increases in wildfire severity. And as we saw with like the 2020 fire, the September of 2020 fires, the smoke adapted communities aren't just those that are you know right next to the fire; they're far-ranging, including the entire state in some instances. For state forest management, the goal is to lead by example and demonstrate climate smart forest management on state forests to achieve adaptation, mitigation, and the achievement of forest resource goals. Part of that is integrating climate change in the forest management plan, and that's taking place this time. Forest lands, climate resilience, and ecological function restoration is to accelerate the pace, scale, and quality of forest restoration to increase the resilience, to increase wildfire severity and incidents, among other things, support implementation of the recommendations of the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response. Some of the things that this will really fall to is the shared stewardship agreement that we have with the Forest Service, as well as good neighbor authority to do things across the landscape. And bringing in the legislative intent and legislative funding that we received this year through SB 762 to really kind of lean in and do more of that work at the landscape level across across Oregon. Urban community forests. This goal is to increase the extent and resilience of urban and community forests to maximize the climate mitigation and health benefits of urban forest canopy. There's lots of research going on and previously that shows that there are direct benefits to having an increased urban forest canopy, whether that's cooling of buildings, reduction of energy use, and just generally public health benefits to having a greater urban forest canopy. Reforestation and afforestation has been identified for a long time as one of the main benefits or one of the main drivers for mitigation across the global landscape. So this goes to facilitate and encourage the reforestation of areas burned by wildfire and afforestation of low productivity lands that are understocked or not in forest use. So this, it's really seen as a mitigation adaptation, designation, which we don't really deal with too much here. Land degradation is beneficial to all of those. One area where we do need to be careful of is to, in the ag sector, not afforesting areas that are currently in ag use that provide food. Food security is one issue where afforestation has been highlighted as a potential conflict. Maintaining and conserving our forest lands to support strong but flexible land use planning system as cornerstone of maintaining Oregon's forests on private lands. This is one where we really need to work with our partner agencies like DLCD. And it has been very successful over time with more than, you know, greater than 97% of the forest lands that were in place in 1974 are still in forest land, which is a great success from our point of view. And the last one is research and monitoring. To maintain a research and monitoring program to track the status and trends of ecological, economic, and social indicators and the effects of climate change and to track progress related to the plan. So part of that is our forest ecosystem carbon report and harvested wood product report, as well as potential other reports and research that will take place down the road and into the future, including things like life cycle analysis and integrating more substitution effects into how things progress through time. So this image is the storage by owner and pool, so forest pool, or in forest pool for the from the ecosystem carbon report. It just highlights how much is stored on the different ownerships across the state. So to support all of those goals, there are a variety of supporting actions. There are linked to multiple goals. There's not a one-to-one relationship between the goals and a supporting action. And that's important to highlight that the actions will support a multitude of different goals. The supporting actions will really be incorporated into agency planning, including documents and processes like the forest management plan, implementation plans, annual operating plans, among others. The climate change and carbon plan is really meant to be a kind of overarching policy for the department. It's not as specific like the forest management plan is to save forest land. Many of the other plans and processes lay out in shorter time segments, like 2 years, or in case of annual operating plans, a single year, what the department's work will be. And those will lean into the climate change and carbon plan to kind of look for guidance. So some examples of what these supporting actions are, incorporating climate change into the FPA rural development and revision process, incentivizing climate smart forestry, both financially and through like recognition processes, developing an internal carbon pricing process, looking forward with that, restoration of low or underproductive performing forest lands like those in this Wisino Cast area, increasing restoration efforts, including a prescribed fire program, which again was kind of pulls on the strings that the legislature provided the department this year, afforestation and reforestation in municipal and community environments, finding where we can really work with community-based organizations, cities, towns, et cetera, to increase that urban and municipal tree canopy, and then investigate further decarbonization of forest activities and harvest down the road, among many other actions that are included. The next steps, a revised draft has been posted on the department's website and will be presented at a pre-decision workshop in September between the board members and the department's executive leadership. Following that, we'll do final editing, and a final draft is expected to go to the board in November for their approval. So the follow-on planning processes to the Climate Change and Carbon Plan include the forestry program for Oregon. So just another quick reminder on this. So the Climate Smart Forestry is based in sustainable forest management, which is in the 2003 and the 2011 versions of the forestry program for Oregon. Previous processes have updated the mission, vision, and values over time from the 1970s through the 80s and into the 90s. There was a focus shift from timber supply assessment to keeping forest land in forest use. There are 19 different indicators of sustainable forest management to measure quantitative and qualitative attributes and to monitor trends. And then there is direction in the forestry program for Oregon that it be updated on about an 8-year cycle. Obviously, we're beyond that with the 2011 revision, so we will be working on that in the future. It will take a substantial amount of time and commitment, and there will be various assessments, public engagement, and stakeholder engagement throughout that whole time. It is meant to harmonize the board and the department and its policies and priorities. And it's really meant to serve as a coherent voice regarding the Board of Forestry's policy and planning moving forward. Like I said, we will probably follow up with that next year. And beginning with that will be a consideration of if the Montreal criteria or an alternative framework is the best way to move forward. Additionally, integration of climate change into the forest management plan. So in October 2020, the board gave direction to the State Forest Division to continue the development of a draft habitat conservation plan and the companion forest management plan for about 640,000 acres of ODF managed lands west of the Cascades. With that, with the ACP entering the NEPA process, the State Forest has been working more on the forest management plan. And you'll hear about an update of that here shortly. Another one that has come up from the legislature this year is the department's 20-year plan. And this, the department is directed by the legislature to develop a plan to address fire risk mitigation work, follows on the recommendations of the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response. So we're just starting this work on the process and moving forward with that. Hopefully we'll have some more capacity and really start to develop a framework for moving that forward in the near future. So that is a summary of Climate Change and Carbon Plan. I'm happy to answer questions at this time. I'm going to stop sharing my screen just so that everyone can see people. Commissioner Sweet.
Yes. John, thank you for that presentation. That was a lot of information, and I took some notes. I know there's a lot more information to come, so even commenting may be premature. But I did take some notes of things that concerned me as you went through your presentation. And right off the bat, in principles, you named communities that will continue to be affected by climate change. I would like to see rural communities added to that. I think in most of these conversations, rural communities are going to be facing the brunt of the impact of some of the measures that we will take to address climate change, not just people of color, not anyway, that would be a concern. You allude in your, the CCCP, you allude quite often to the benefits of storing carbon in building products. And I don't know if you mentioned in there the benefit of building with wood as opposed to concrete and steel, which certainly throw off more carbon dioxide. I agree. You do mention that the building with wood is a good thing, but when you come to action goals, you include that as a subset to silviculture. And I think there's a good body of science out there that would move using wood to build with out of a subset into a primary goal, perhaps. I think back several years ago when I attended a coastal caucus meeting in I believe it was Florence, Oregon, and one of the presenters there on their discussion about global warming was a professor of forestry from Yale by the name of Chadwick Oliver. And he named four things. He was also a professor of sustainability, and he named four things that we could do that would have great impact upon reducing CO2 in the world. And that one of those things was building with more wood. And yet we kind of give that short shrift, I think, here in your goals. You go on to supportive actions that could be taken, and again, those supportive actions do not include using more wood to build with, as opposed to having to use other materials such as concrete and steel if we don't build with wood. Then you have the follow on planning processes. And it's one of the focuses was to concentrate on forest acreage instead of timber production. But if building with wood is good for the climate, then timber production needs to continue to be a focus, in my view. So those are some of the concerns I have right off the top. And it's a pretty brief look at this, but I wish you could take a look at some of those concerns. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for those comments. And we definitely recognize the harvest wood products, the substitution effects, et cetera. One thing that kind of was leading the drafting of this was the statutory analysis, statutory authority analysis that the Department of Justice did for us last year. And it really showed that the further we get away from the woods themselves, the less authority we have. So there's definitely plenty of research that shows the great benefits of utilizing wood as substitution. We do have one person, and we did have a position that we requested from the legislature that would help to increase the utilization or help to increase markets for utilization of wood products. So I will look on ways to increase that and look at some more support there.
Thank you, Danny. I owe you an apology. I called you John, thinking of John, and I can't pronounce his last name. But, you know, along that line, you did, when you started talking about afforestation or reforestation, you did say that you held a special spot in your heart, or the study did, for food security. And so figuring that we had to be careful not to take agricultural land out of production, and in creating more forest to capture more carbon dioxide, contribute to food issues. We also have housing issues, and we didn't give the same consideration to that or to the benefits of building with wood. So I was a little disturbed that you would concentrate on one social issue, food availability, and not another, affordable housing, and still a third, the capture of carbon in wood building products.
All good points. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in. I'm sorry to jump in, Danny. The afforestation topic is a critical one for the purposes that you note. And with respect to where afforestation and investment occurs, part of that is a productivity conversation and utilization of that resource. So where there's competing good, it raises questions, but it doesn't challenge the importance of afforestation by any measure.
Okay, thank you. Let's take the hands in order. Commissioner Banks.
Good morning, everyone. So just to follow up with you know, Commissioner Sweet's comments in regards to acknowledging our forest products as a valuable portion of this effort of carbon sequestering, because I concur with him that, you know, I realize and I acknowledge as the further we get from our forests, the less control you have over that topic or the ability to use that particular avenue in order to that measurable particular avenue in order to focus on our climate change initiatives. But as we move through this conversation, I too would like a little bit more acknowledgement to our wood products. And I'm just curious, you know, and I'll ask one question, but then I'll have a follow-up comment. I'm curious as to the measurements that we use when we talk about forests on the land in sequestering versus the forest wood products. Is it a one-to-one measurable carbon sequestering situation, or are you unable to measure the forest wood products as a portion of this initiative or this CCCP?
I just want to make sure I understand your question. You're asking if we have the research and the numbers to show the amount used of harvested wood products versus in the woods?
Let me try to clarify. What I'm asking is can we acknowledge the amount of carbon sequestered in this process of the CCP moving forward, or are we only able to address basic just the forest on the land?
Maybe. Danny, I might be able to help here because I think I'm picking up what you're saying, Courtney, which or Commissioner Banks. I think the question is, can we measure and compare the amount of carbon that has been stored in wood products to the amount of carbon that has been stored or is stored in the forest? Is that right, Commissioner Banks?
Yes, and then just to continue on with that, can we use that measurement within the CCCP moving forward as part of our climate change initiative?
So I'll throw out that a lot of the public comments that we had did highlight that they want more kind of hard numbers. So that's where that would come in. From the outset, this was much more of a policy document than it is, you know, something that's highly specific regarding numbers and timelines and such. So we do have numbers around what is in the woods and what is stored in harvested wood products. Harvest wood products we have going back to 1906. If we want to break it out by ownership, it's the mid 60s for that. So we can utilize some of those numbers, and we have that research, and it will be refined moving forward. If you have a specific idea, like if we're looking for, you know, displacement moving forward, substitution moving forward, that might be a little bit more difficult because a lot of that is shifting quickly. We're seeing more mass timber buildings. We're seeing a lot more utilization of like CLT, mass plywood, than we have in the past. So that kind of shifts where that trajectory may go in the future. We can definitely do some looking back. Global Warming Commission has done some of that. And we can look to the work that they've done, among other things. So
okay.
I'll think on that one and see if there's a place where we can lean in and relate it back to Commissioner Sweet's comments, kind of pull in what the substitution effects are and if we can figure that out a little bit more.
I guess, you know, just to follow up, one of my largest concerns is as we look at our federal neighbors who have really focused on the conservation side of this coin as how to address climate change. My concern is what happens, or are we taking into account the acres that we lose during fire season? Because the exponential damage to this carbon issue occurs during fire season. And so I think, you know, for me, when I look at this issue or, you know, I think a certain amount of conservation is great, but I also think that the harvested product is great too. And I'm really concerned that we're going to follow down the path of our federal neighbors and just see more and more dangerous fire seasons. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bangs. Commissioner Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Yamamoto. I came to Clatsop County as an urban environmentalist. I now consider myself to be much more balanced in terms of being an environmental economist. I have to look at the environment, how to sequester carbon, how to keep moving in the direction of a more habitable planet. At the same time, I have to look at the economies of rural Oregon. So I want to see a measure. I don't know, you don't have to do what I want, but I'm telling you what I want, please, is that you look at the economies of rural Oregon and you expand the scope of your focus to include the time before there was a shift from the forest industry as a prime determinant of the Oregon economy to tourism as a prime deterrent in the Oregon economy, because tourists like parks cost money to maintain, or they become sources of wildfire conflagration and they waste carbon. They release it in the air. So if we look at the cost of everything, tourists like parks cost money. Working forest lands provide support for the rural tax base and for rural families, rural companies. How do we look at those and make rural economies a clear and present focus? In my mind, we make automation our friend by using the efforts of the Tallwood Design Institute, for example, and having dedicated staff within the Department of Forestry to promote the use of such products that add value to the forest, as mass plywood panels to build modular housing. Okay, friends and colleagues, I'm back. We're talking about mass plywood panels building modular housing. Then we look at the housing issue, we look at the economic issue, and we look at the climate issue. That is complex, adaptive, interactive systems. So I would ask you to consider all of that. Thank you.
Maybe I'll lean in here a little bit, and that's always dangerous because we've got the experts in Danny and John, but just to give a state forest perspective. So I think everyone recognizes, but it's worth stating, obviously, the climate change and carbon paper is written at a large scale, crossing all of the business lines, if you will, of state forests. And of course, as Danny said, to really help frame up the policy work of the Board of Forestry. And then it drills down into how each division, if you will, or business line can contribute to the vision and goals of the agency. So what Mike Wilson and I can do is speak a little bit to the state forest topic. What you're asking about, Leanne, crosses those, right? It crosses policies, actions, and what we're doing on state forests. It's got a large scale look and a smaller scale look. I would say for state forests, we're pretty small scale compared to the broader, obviously, impacts at a global scale or even at a regional scale. We still have a lot to contribute, and particularly in the adapt and mitigate. So your ideas are really important for us to hear in that vein. The conversation around rural communities that you opened up with, very near and dear to us as a state forest division, where we clearly, that's where what we do really has a close linkage, right, with those rural communities. One of the things about climate smart forestry is it recognizes within the definition, you can pick a definition, but I think in the one that Danny and John have written into the CCCP, it recognizes the importance of the social factors in any decisions that are made related to carbon sequestration. So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying, I think that you're spot on. And I think that climate change forestry has a space for that. And when we are thinking about the forest management plan and following board direction on climate smart forestry, that will be in our minds, and that'll be an important conversation with the board. And I referenced the board two or three times there. So Jim, Chair Kelly, if you want to lean in on this, I welcome your thinking.
Sure. You bet. I've got several thoughts. I mean, one is, besides the feedback that we are receiving today, I want to remind everyone that the board will be looking at this and having a presentation on the CCCP during our September meeting. And so we welcome testimony, both written and testimony in person for that meeting on this subject. Two, I noted Commissioner Sweet's comment about essentially what's the equity statement and the fact that rural communities were not called out. And, you know, I agree. I think in these statements about BIPOC, we often miss intergenerational poverty. And that's, as you as commissioners in rural communities are very familiar with, we have tons of what is now intergenerational poverty. And those people are disadvantaged, just like a lot of people who've been historically disadvantaged based on race, et cetera. And so I do think maybe we want to tweak that statement a little bit to make sure that we are including intergenerational poverty, or which of course, is common in a lot of these rural communities. So I agree with that point. Also, I want to bring up just something else quickly, since, again, there are a lot of county commissioners here, and that's regarding afforestation. And this isn't really a state forest issue, but since I've got a little audience here, I'll say I think we have a lot of opportunity, not in replacing agricultural lands, but finding small parcels, 1, 2, 5, 10 acres that most farmers have some acreage that probably was forested originally. I'm talking really about Western Oregon, coastal Oregon, but for one reason or another are not appropriate for either commercial forestry or for actual farming. And as you all drive home, each day and you look at those properties in your counties, I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to be planting trees that could be used commercially or not, that reduce the pressure on our commercial and industrial forests. Okay, that's it.
Chair Yamamoto?
You have a comment, Bob?
Yes, I do.
So we've got two people in front of you.
Right. I was trying to figure out how to get the hand up, but I can't do that.
I will call on you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Courtney, you had your first chance. I'm going to go to Commissioner Magruder.
Good morning. This is certainly an interesting conversation, and I, in reading the climate change and carbon plan, it struck me as perhaps being a little not as practical as I am. I've been a farmer all my life, and it's, you know, see something that needs to be done and get it done. I'd certainly appreciate the comments of my colleagues, previous comments that they've made. I am very supportive of those comments. And we do need to achieve balance, but in order to achieve anything, I think that the economic aspect still has to take some precedence, because we cannot support government, we cannot support anything without dollars. So I would like to see a little bit more emphasis as the Board of Forestry frames their overall policy to achieving some economic stability. I know the department has some economic stability issues, so I think you need to think about that a little bit more. Otherwise, I struggle with the existential issues that are presented, and find that sometimes we need to address things in a little more practical way. So this is a great effort, but it certainly needs a lot more practical thought. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Magruder. Let's go to Commissioner Main.
I have some thoughts. If you know anything about me, I'm pretty practical, and I like to rely on scientific facts. So in 2019, CO2 measurement around the Earth was roughly 409 ppm. Okay? If you go and look up the CO2 alarm system on the space station, the alarm goes off at 5,000. If you go and look at submarine alarm systems for CO2, the alarm goes off at 7,000 ppm. Now, if you get to 180 or less ppm, all plants on the earth die. So what is the big deal here? And especially during the age of the dinosaurs, it was around 3,000 or 4,000 ppm. Plants have to have CO2 to exist. Thank you. And if you don't believe me, go look it up.
Thank you, Commissioner Main. Commissioner Bang.
Good morning. So I just wanted to acknowledge Chair Kelly's statement about adding our rural constituency or our rural concerns to your BIPOC conversation. That's something that I wish were acknowledged in more forums, because that characteristic poverty of the rural communities is very important for us to be aware of. I wanted to go maybe a step further in the afforestation concern. As we sit here today and we talk about potentially limiting harvests for any reason in Oregon, Oregon being probably one of the most productive landscapes for forestry products. in my lowly opinion, we will be pushing this afforestation off onto other, this afforestation concern off onto other communities. It'll shift to areas with less regulations than we do have here. And it would potentially lead to larger areas of afforestation, you know, across the world. I just wish to acknowledge how amazing our landscape is here and how productive our landscape is here. And that at any consideration that we take that says we're going to be removing a certain number of acres from production of forest products, we are putting somebody else's community at risk. And that community could be a community that has a lot less regulation. And so I want to acknowledge the amazing regulations that we have here in Oregon already and protect our environment. And you know, I know that we're worried currently about our backyard, but I don't want to push this into somebody else's backyard and make their backyard worse. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Bangs. I'd like to make a few comments if I might. So first of all, and I would ask Liz. Liz, we've had long conversations about this. FGLAC needs to have the slideshow, the PowerPoint presentation that was just presented by Mr. Nordlander. We had not seen that prior. And again, we talked about making sure that FGLAC has all of the reports and things that will be presented to FGLAC, and we have not seen this one yet. So I am asking for that. Also, I have not seen the Forest Ecosystems Carbon Report and the Harvested Wood Products Carbon Report. I know I've been bugging you about this for the past 2 or almost 3 years. And you were saying that the department is working on that. We would have it in November, and I think that was November of 2019, actually. And I'm kind of surprised to see that report has been done and has not been passed out to the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties. So if you could please get us the PowerPoint presentation and those two documents, Ecosystems Carbon Report and the Harvested Wood Products Carbon Report, I would appreciate that so much. It's such a nice thought to make Oregon forestry a leader in climate change mitigation and adaptation. And I think that's a great goal. But one of the things that I don't think we're seeing is a balance with the economic viability of the trust counties and our special districts. And I think we really need to concentrate on that a little more. I do see lots of aspirational language in the CCCP. With few specifics. And so when it goes before the Board of Forestry on September 8th, and then it goes back to the Board of Forestry for as an action item in November, I am concerned about what type of specifics are going to be involved in that action item for the Board of Forestry in November. I think we need a lot more definition of climate smart forestry. I really do. It appears to me that this is going to be a guiding policy for ODF. And yet again, without enough specifics, I'm not sure how that can happen. And then if it's adopted, the specifics are going to come later. And that to me is problematical. Again, and this document asserts that as a given, a number of quote-unquote principles about climate change and without a lot of supporting documentation. And I think we really need to see a lot more of that supporting documentation. What I see here, you're kind of experimenting with our state forests. And that to me is problematical from a county commissioner point of view, a trust county. These are our state forest lands that we granted to the state to be managed for greatest permanent value. And I see some problems moving forward. One of the things that happened is that we're trying to make sure that we replace or keep wood products primary in our buildings. because that is as far as carbon sequestration goes, that is the best avenue, especially when you consider the alternatives like steel and concrete and plastics, things of that nature. So I think, and what we saw when we went through the pandemic early on was the fact that we had huge issues with because there were so few people in the workforce, lumber prices just spiked and people couldn't build homes. But concrete and steel were the same way. So we have to make sure that we look at all of those things. And I'm going through the TCCP report. I wasn't able to follow as quickly as I needed to on the PowerPoint plan. So when we talk about the land use planning system, and it was mentioned that, you know, it had to be a strong but flexible. Well, anybody that deals with the Department of Land Conservation Development and the top-down planning process that this state has with the 19 state planning goals knows that it's strong, but I think most people would argue with you that it is not flexible. And that, I think, is one of the huge problems that we're going to face here. Again, when it comes to agency leadership, you will prioritize climate change. And I understand that. But then when you have the three agency decisions, prioritize actions that reduce greenhouse gas emissions in a cost-effective manner, cost-effective as to what goal, what paradigm are we talking about? Prioritize actions that will help vulnerable populations and impacted communities. And here again is where I go back to impacted communities being the trust counties. We've already been devastated several times by a reduction in timber harvest. And I see things happening, again, as I mentioned earlier in my comments, that it's not getting better. And then your consultation with the Environmental Justice Task Force for evaluating climate change mitigation and adaptation priorities and actions. I think that really needs to be broken down into exactly what we're talking about there. Again, not a lot of specifics here. So an operational shared stewardship program to accelerate the pace, scale, and quality of federal forest reforestation. And I think that's very important. And I think that really needs to be a very early discussion with our friends at BLM and U.S. Forest Service. They're cutting very, very little timber today. And that is our carbon sequestration in the state of Oregon. I think we have other lands that should be managed for greatest permanent value moving forward. Those are kind of my comments at this point. Again, there's a lot to this. It's brand new. I'm concerned that we were looking at this today, going to the Board of Forestry on September 8th for a presentation. And then at the very next meeting in November, the Board of Forestry is expected to make some sort of decision as to what we're going to do there. So I just have some concerns. I have some great concerns. So I see we have three other hands up. John DiLorenzo, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for giving me a chance to say something here. I am, as most of you know, I'm class counsel in the Linn County versus Board of Forestry case that involves most of you. I'm not going to talk about the litigation. But unlike my friend Mark Rasmussen, I do not intend to retire until certain matters are attended to. So you're going to be stuck with me for a while. I do have a critique. I've read the carbon plan. I mean this critique as constructive. And I am so glad that Chair Kelly's on the line and others from the board. And so I'll keep my critique at a high level. First, I'd pick a new acronym. Maybe this is generational, but that's the symbol for the Soviet Union. And many of us in my generation and above turn off as soon as we see something like this. So, you know, if you want to maintain open minds among a good portion of your audience, you might want to pick a new acronym. That's number one. Number two, I do not believe after reading the policy that this proposes a coherent policy at all. Rather, it appears to be a collection of staff musings about how to possibly address climate change. The draft does not even define what it means by climate smart forestry. And instead, it actually acknowledges at page 8 that it means different things to different people. In my 40 years of experience dealing as a lawyer with state agencies, it tells me that whenever an agency advocates for a nebulous policy, it treats the policy as a license to basically do whatever it wants in the future. And so you really ought to be cautious about nebulous policies and starting with the definition, you need to pare it down, at least define what it means in your mind, instead of just come out with a definition and then say, well, it means different things to different people. At page 13, it attempts once again to redefine what the term greatest permanent value means. Now, as we learned in the Linn County class action, greatest permanent value is a key term of the contract between your counties and the state, and cannot be unilaterally changed without the consent of the counties. So if it were me, I would avoid any reference to greatest permanent value at all, and just talk about the statutory charge that you've been given regarding carbon. Now, if we descend a little bit into the policy statement, to me, the most significant problem is that the policy draft treats forest fires as a symptom of climate change rather than as a substantial contributor to it. At page 5, the draft is almost resigned to expecting the severity and size of these wildfires to continue over the near and the long term. Well, members of this body and members of the Board of Forestry, that's not problem solving. That's resignation and surrender, in my view. In addition, the draft purports to propose what it then calls, quote, bold steps, okay? And then it enumerates things that will barely move the needle, like retiring old vehicles, promoting remote work, formal recognition of the existence of climate change, urban community forests to address the impacts of redlining and racial discrimination. Now, you know, John Sweet alluded to this, and I'm very glad that Chair Kelly mentioned this. But the draft, although it mentions racial equity throughout, and that's very important to be sure, no doubt about that. But where is the equity in pursuing forest management policies that have deprived rural residents of their livelihoods and have condemned at least two generations of children to no memory of a parent getting up in the morning going to work? Where is that addressed here? We learned during the Linn County trial that the agency has bent over backwards to create endangered species habitat when it had no legal obligation to do so. The spotted owl and the marbled murrelet feed none of your residents' families. All they do is provide employment for some of the agency's biologists. Finally, the draft proposes more of the same failed policies that will not only further injure your residents, but will likely add to carbon levels. For instance, harvest deferrals will only make your valuable assets that could supply needed revenue vulnerable to even more catastrophic fires. Page 11 acknowledges that the current forest policies have resulted in higher levels of fuel in the forest. Well, that's due to lack of harvesting and policies that age the forest on purpose. This draft proposes harvest deferrals, carbon pricing that will result in even greater reserves, and then mentions specific timber harvest deferrals. Well, you know, here are some facts. First of all, one large fire, which, you know, it may be roughly a million acres, can emit up to 15 million tons of carbon, equivalent to a quarter of Oregon's annual human-caused emissions, and twice as much carbon as all the cars that Portland emits in 1 year. Now, on average, 11.4 million metric tons of carbon dioxide are emitted per fire season in Oregon. That's the equivalent of 1.28 billion gallons of gasoline consumed. Carbon emissions from the 2020 Oregon wildfires surpassed those from both our energy and transportation sectors, which were previously our largest sources of emissions. Now, you know, Commissioner Yamamoto mentioned that wood buildings produce less air and water pollution, require less energy, less carbon dioxide. In fact, building with wood instead of steel and concrete would reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 20%. And for every ton of carbon in wood used, 2.1 tons of carbon emissions are avoided. Okay, so what's the best carbon policy then for the Department of Forestry to pursue in light of all of that? Well, first, I would either go back to the drawing board on this draft or possibly abandon it and not, you know, not suggest strategies that are going to barely move the needle. Instead, prevent at least one forest fire. If you can prevent at least one forest fire from occurring, you will do more to save the atmosphere from carbon than anything else that this plan proposes. You do that by clearing the forest floor, and do that by increasing salvage logging and harvest to sustainable levels, so we start replacing whatever we cut, but don't allow the timber to age to the point where it becomes legally off limits to harvest and will only remain vulnerable to being consumed by the next fire and then pump millions of tons of carbon into the atmosphere. Anything else I think is window dressing. So I recommend you go back to the drawing board, and I'll conclude there.
Thank you, Mr. DiLorenzo. Acting State Forester Nancy Hirsch.
Yeah, thank you. Really appreciate the discussion, the questions, and the engagement on this topic here today. Would just emphasize that, you know, continuing to have these regular scheduled meetings will assure, you know, this ongoing dialogue. And, you know, I also, too, probably consider myself a pretty pragmatic person. And yet I've also been a public employee, a public servant for many decades, and would like to, you know, also recognize the work of this ongoing work and recognize this as a draft that definitely has received a lot of feedback in focus groups and specifically in public forums and public comments, and continue to encourage, you know, the comments that you've shared today. That said, you know, I guess if there was any assurance in my view that I could offer, that would be, you know, as I said, I'm pragmatic. Some of you have said you are. And I think we all are living with the crisis and the challenges related to climate change. And, you know, wish that, you know, we had more specific clarity around what actions the board, the department may take and are already taking in some cases. That said, I do want to, I guess, provide the assurance that, you know, this is a pretty high level policy strategic document, and that the board's work ongoing with each of the department's core businesses, i.e. state forests being one of those, private forests, and our partnership planning program that is actually doing a lot of work in partnership and on federal acres, as well as BLM forests at this time. And then, of course, our fire division. And as that work proceeds, it's through that work and decisions that the board makes that gets much closer at the reality of actionable items where actual measurements can be made. And so I hope you continue to walk this path with us. And again, just thanks for your engagement today on the topic. And Thanks, Danny and John. Great presentation.
Thank you for those comments, Nancy. I thought we had someone else. We had...
That was me, Chair Yamamoto. That's okay. I'll actually let things move along, and what I was going to say can probably be said said later.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Do we have any other comments, questions? Okay, so we are a little behind schedule, but I think we all need a quick bio break. We're going to do 5 minutes, so we will be back at 11:24 to continue on with this meeting. Hope that's all right with everyone. Thank you. So by my clock, I think we've got one more minute. Okay, why don't we get started again? I do want to make one other announcement here, for especially for all the commissioners. We do have another FTLAC meeting scheduled for Friday, September 17th, and it will be at the same time. And we're going to be digging, I think, into much more detail in our next topic, the FMP and HCP development process and updates. Liz, let me turn it back over to you. Hope you're with us. Are you with us out there?
I sure am. Thank you. Thank you. As I stated in the opening, the next topic here is to update you all on the process and timelines for the FMP HCP work, how the CCCP intersects with it. And so with that, some updates on the HCP and FMP. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Mike.
Thank you. And what we're gonna start with, I believe, is really, an FMP update, and then and Sarah will go through that process and those timelines, and then I will give a brief HCP timeline update after that.
Thanks, Mike. So I asked for your patience. I'm going to share my screen here. If I could just get confirmation that everyone can see the slideshow. Perfect, thank you. So good morning, Chair Yamamoto, Vice Chair Sweet, Commissioners. My name is Sarah Lathrop and I serve as the Forest Management Plan and Implementation Plan Development Project Manager. Today I'll be giving a brief update that will include the high level project timeline, the detailed draft goal and strategy development timelines, next steps for the project team, and some upcoming key dates for the committee to consider. I will not be presenting the draft goals today as we have a separate engagement planned on September 17th for that discussion. I'll start today with the high-level project timeline. So this graphic represents the working FMP development timeline. Please note the elements represented in this timeline are subject to change. I also recognize that there is a lot of information packed into this graphic, so I will talk through each row in detail. So starting at the top left with FMP content, this purple bar represents the timeline for developing the draft FMP. The project team will be developing content for the next 6 months, and the goal will be to provide a draft FMP for the April 2022 Board of Forestry meeting. The division will be asking for direction on the draft, and will then enter a period of draft refinement and technical writing. The second draft of the FMP will be due in July of 2022 in preparation for the September Board of Forestry decision to enter the formal rulemaking process. The remainder of the content development timeline is to finalize the FMP, which ends in December 2022, when the project team submits the final draft FMP for Board of Forestry decision. Moving down to the second bar, labeled FMP modeling, which is represented in blue, you will see that the model preparation is already underway. When the data updates are complete and the project team has produced the first draft of the FMP strategies, model calibration will begin. Model calibration will be conducted between October and December 2021, and model scenarios will be run between December 2021 and February 2022 to support the development of the outcomes analysis report. Moving to the third bar, labeled FMP rulemaking, represented in green, shows some of the high-level processes if the Board of Forestry makes a decision to enter the formal rulemaking process. The team anticipates a 30-day public comment period in October and will use the following month to incorporate input received prior to submitting the final draft FMP for board decision. Since the agency climate change and carbon plan will have a high impact on the FMP goals and strategies, we have included key milestones in the FMP timeline. The September Board of Forestry meeting will be a great opportunity for the team and the agency to gain more clarity around how we will move forward in support of this overarching plan. It is expected that the climate change and carbon plan will be presented to the board in November for approval. Danny Norlander, who you heard from today, is the climate change and carbon plan lead, and he is integrated into the FMP and IP project team. And we do feel confident that the planning efforts will be well aligned. Moving to the next row, represented in yellow, are planned public engagements. This month, the focus for engagement was on introducing and discussing the draft FMP goals. The project team held a meeting open to the public on October 10th and another joint stakeholder meeting on August 18th to introduce and discuss the draft goals. We also have confirmed dates of October 12th for a meeting open to the public, and we'll be holding two joint stakeholder meetings on October 20th and 22nd to discuss the draft strategies. The remaining engagements in this row are placeholders until meeting dates are confirmed, but we plan to engage with the public every other month for the remainder of the project. The fifth row, represented in orange, are planned engagements with this committee. We look forward to discussing the draft goals on September 17th and plan to introduce the FMP strategies to the committee in October. The remaining engagements on the FTLAC timeline are placeholders until meeting dates are confirmed, but we would like to keep the cadence of meeting with the committee regularly to present and discuss content as it becomes available. The final element represented in the timeline is the Board of Forestry plan, which highlights the deliverables the division expects to bring to the board over the next 2 years. Starting at the far left is the completed June 2021 meeting, in which the team provided a high-level informational project update to the board. The box in August 2021 represents Board of Forestry member check-ins for the purpose of onboarding and information sharing and preparation for upcoming board meetings. In November 2021, the division plans to bring the guiding principles with recommended changes to reflect the current environment, the draft FMP goals, and we will be seeking direction from the board on what they would like to see in the FMP modeling outcomes analysis report. In April 2022, the division plans to provide a draft FMP that will include the elements required by the planning rule and to present the draft FMP strategies and the modeling outcomes analysis report. Please note, the timing of this meeting is dependent on when the draft environmental impact statement for the draft habitat conservation plan is presented. There is potential that this planned meeting will shift to the right a month or two. The goal for the April 2022 meeting is to receive direction from the board on FMP finalization in preparation for the September rulemaking decision. In June 2022, more informational check-ins with board members will occur in preparation for the September meeting. In September 2022, the team will provide a second draft FMP, which will be considered near final, pending the decision to enter rulemaking and finalization after the public comment period in October. In addition, the division will present the implementation plan framework and modeling in September. The final board meeting on the timeline is in February of 2023, which will be a final decision to approve the draft FMP and draft HCP for Western Oregon. So I know that was a lot of information, and I would like to pause here just to ask if there are any questions on the timeline while it's displayed here on the slide. So I'll pause and open it to the group.
Thank you, Sarah. Do we have any questions about the timelines for Sarah? Sarah, you did a great job. No one's got any questions.
Excellent. So we will move along here. I do want to talk a little bit about the FMP goals to describe in more detail about the timeline for revision and review. So this slide highlights the timeline the team is using to ensure the draft goals are revised in time for inclusion in the November Board of Forestry staff report. So starting with the first bullet, we set a deadline of September 8th for written comment on the draft goals. The preferred collection method for submitting feedback on the draft goals is the survey that was included in Liz's email to the committee, and I will post that to the chat after my presentation so it's fresh in everybody's and available. And I'll also post my email. That is one other method that we've allowed for written comment. So moving down here, our technical team will begin reviewing written comment on the 3rd of September, and we'll also hold a meeting on the 9th of September to help prioritize and provide direction to the project team on goal revisions. On September 9th, the core team and subject matter experts will meet to discuss the feedback received and begin revising the goals. On September 17th, we will be meeting with this committee to have the discussion on the draft goals. I plan to bring the feedback from this meeting to the team for final revisions prior to submitting the draft goals in the November board staff report. The team will be seeking direction from the board on the draft content. We look forward to engaging with you over this next month and for the remainder of the project lifecycle. With the goals covered, I would like to talk a little bit and introduce the timeline and process that we'll be using for drafting the FMP strategies. And so this process flowchart shows the process that we'll be using as a team to draft and review and refine the strategies as we move through this process. So starting with step one in the upper left, our core team will be developing content. We'll be developing draft strategies until the 2nd of September. They'll then move into an internal review, which includes some of our field staff, our executive sponsors, our leadership group, and we have been including our partner state agencies. Many of the strategies are very closely linked to our partner agencies, so we do have them review as well. Step three is for a revision based on the internal feedback that's received. And then step four, our leadership group will approve the content for external sharing, and that will happen around October 5th. So the two boxes that are important for the committee are step five, we'll be emailing a notification as we did with the goals to the committee to notify you that the draft strategies are ready for review. And then we'll be providing a period of time for comments to come in. So between October 7th and November 6th, we'll be welcoming written comment on the draft strategies. Moving to step seven, the core team will then review the input and revise the content. And then we'll move into a technical writing period. And then step nine is basically to repeat steps one through four to ensure that the content is ready for board staff reports. And then I'd like to conclude the update today just to highlight the team's priorities in the coming months. As mentioned, the team is currently working to develop the draft strategies. And as mentioned previously, we'll be releasing the content in early October for external review and input. Data updates to support modeling are underway, and the team plans to start modeling calibration in October. The agency will also be releasing a professional services contract opportunity to support key project deliverables, including modeling and the modeling outcomes analysis report that will be presented to the board in 2022. I really appreciate the opportunity to provide this update to the committee today and would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
I was trying to unmute there. Thank you, Sarah. Do we have any questions for Sarah? So you see, Sarah, you're doing a great job. No one's got any questions. That's great. Liz, I'll turn it back to you. Thank you, Sarah.
It looks like Commissioner Sweet has his hand up.
I'm not letting you off that easy, Sarah. And I know full well I'm jumping ahead because you explained the process very, very nicely. But I want you to know now that I'm discouraged in my view of the draft plan or the drafted goals, that there is no mention in there about carbon storage in finished wood products. If anything, the plan would suggest that you are counting on the forest itself to be the main reservoir of carbon storage, and which would mean there'd be little to no harvest of the forest, and you're not taking into account in the plan the importance of carbon storage in lumber and plywood and other finished products. Thank you. And I apologize for jumping ahead, but I couldn't not say that right now.
Thank you, Vice Chair Sweet. And I would offer a chance for Mike or Danny to respond if you have any comments.
Yeah. Chair Yamamoto, Vice Chair Sweet, thank you, members of the committee. I really, I appreciate that. That FMP goal right now is pretty generic. And part of it is, the need to see how other conversations play out. And your input, of course, is a huge part of that. We look forward really to working with Mark Rasmussen and now Mike as well to do the modeling scenarios for the FMP work. And that really focuses in on our timber management. And, so there's always the trade-offs there between carbon, timber, revenue, and costs. And the finished wood product part of that is a huge part of it. And trying to find that optimization of where we have carbon in all these pools, in the harvested wood products and soils and standing forest and all of that. And so we look forward to looking at a number of silvicultural pathways, as well as a number of flows, of volume flows and so forth across different spatial scales, to really get at what are the economic outcomes for rural communities. Revenues to counties, of course, but then also jobs and these things.
Thank you for including Mark and Mike in your deliberations. I think they have some really good information to share regarding the sequestration of carbon in products and how that contributes considerably to what the forests themselves store. Thank you.
And yes, Mike, I appreciate that also. And I'm hoping, again, you will take into consideration the alternative of using other than wood building products to build. I know I don't know because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure your harvested wood products carbon report also includes the cost of carbon to harvest and manufacture and transport and things like that. So if you've got one side of the negatives, you need to look at the other side, what we're replacing and the carbon impact on steel and concrete and composites, things of that nature. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, I know, but I would appreciate that. And Liz, I would hope that we would get the presentation from Sarah also, the PowerPoint presentation, so that we can peruse that. I would appreciate that. And Liz, I'll turn it back to you. Thank you.
Mike, did you have something? Yeah, Mike has a little bit more to talk to the group about.
It's just a really, really brief update on the HCP process. I think that the NEPA process is in the services' hands still. NOAA Fisheries being the lead agency and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service being the cooperating agency, as they call it. anyway, they are proceeding with their analyses and alternative development and all sorts of other stuff under the draft EIS. They are doing quite, I do not know all the details of everything they're doing. You know, we're at a bit of an arm's length in some of that, obviously. I do know that the draft EIS, which was previously scheduled to come out in November, is now going to be coming out in late January. So, in late January, the draft EIS will come out. At the same time, what's known as the public draft of the HCP will come out, and they will run for a concurrent 45-day public comment period. So what we are currently doing on the ODF side is what is a really, really valuable internal operational review in preparation to be able to turn out an edited public draft. Now, I want to be real clear here is that public draft, it's in the operational review and the refinements there are about how we would implement the HCP basically as you see it in the administrative draft. I also want to be clear that the public comment period there, when that public comment period ends, that's not the end of the work on the HCP. The door does not close at that point. There are the two routes of comment there. One is on the draft EIS itself, and the other is on the HCP itself. I think we've said this before, but probably worth repeating. A lot of times where we're currently at, in the NEPA process, there is no draft HCP. There's nothing that's actually been put out there. We're ahead of the game, so to speak, in that respect. Usually it is the that public draft, as it is called, that comes out with the draft EIS. That's also the notification that we are formally applying for an incidental take permit. But with the results of the draft EIS, all of the public comment and whatnot, then there is the continued opportunity to respond and adjust the HCP. And our understanding is adjustments to the HCP within the range of the alternatives considered is, you know, something that we can do, right? So that's actually good news. That does not mean that any alternative is optimized or actually an HCP in and of itself, but as I think we've discussed before, or that Terry O'Rourke has mentioned before when she's spoken to you, but basically it's just that space is there. So just the main message I guess I'm trying to get across is that's not the end of the process. There's still work to do and so forth. So with that, I think that's all I had for that timeline update on the HCP.
Okay. Thank you. Liz, I'll turn it back to you.
It looks like Commissioner Bangs might have a question.
Why I'm not seeing hands again all of a sudden. I don't know why. Commissioner Banks.
Sorry, I forgot to push the hand button.
Oh, well.
When we last spoke last month, I asked for, I guess, a reiteration that our economic outlook for our counties remained the same from the projections that you provided to the Board of Forestry, which you then confirmed. But what I forgot to do was ask about our projections for a departure, if they are also remaining the same for our counties.
So at this point, the economics, the modeling that was done to support the comparative analysis are the same. And the geographic scope is also the same. What we will be doing, and this gets back more to the work that we'll be doing with Mark and MBG, is we will be looking at not only these different silvicultural pathways, but then also the temporal and spatial scale of flow. And we've kicked around a few ideas on that. And on our side, we're just about packaged up with a few scenarios that we want to run by Mark and see if they match up with his ideas and do some back and forth on that. So the modeling that we will be doing for F&P outcomes will shed a lot of light on what those deltas look like between even flow, between the departure, and between those things at different spatial scales. And one of those spatial scales will be the county scale. So for instance, a question, you know, might be, what does the even flow output look like if we were to target even flow, non-declining even flow, on a county by county basis, as opposed to the HCP subgeographic areas? And then we would also still take another look at the HCP subgeographic areas and maybe a couple other, one or two other spatial scales and say, okay, so what does that look like compared to the delta you might get with a departure or even the even flow at a different scale? What's that look like for the counties?
So in layman's terms, you're unsure if the departure that you promised to the counties will remain the same.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm really saying is what we'll be doing is further work into that to help inform the decision on whether for you all, whether a departure is desirable versus some other flow, like say even flow at a county level versus a departure at a county level, that sort of thing.
Yeah, this is I'll just echo that and make sure that we're all kind of seeing this the same way. We feel like this is a really important conversation and decision space for the counties. And so we've been working with Mark and talking to the FTLAC leadership around how best to inform that conversation. So that's the work that Mike and Mark are collaborating on, rather than us deciding, here's the departure that the counties should use, providing you some information to decide how you would like to see that revenue flow to the county over to the counties over time.
Simply more.
Well, thank you for that, John. That was great.
Right. Do you want more now, or do you want this spread out over time? And that's sort of the difference. That's the piece we're trying to pull
forever
together.
So again, appreciate you working with Mark and now Mike on that issue. So Mark or Mike, do you want to make any comments at this point?
Yeah. So I think it's important here to think about what we are doing on your behalf, which is suggesting some analysis that would provide information for you all to make some decisions. You might remember at our FTLAC meeting a year ago or so, we looked at the harvest flows county by county, and you could see that changing dramatically from one period to the next at the county, at each county level. And it's not clear to me that is necessarily needs to be the case. And so that's what we're going to investigate here, is whether the harvest within a county can be smoothed out without making any big changes in all the other outcomes of the forest plan and the HCP and everything. If that's the case, then we'll bring it back to you all and you can make some comments and directions to ODF about what it is you'd like to see happen there. Right now, the schedule that was prepared for last year, just for last year's analysis of the HCP was just, I think it was an artifact of the modeling rather than the model giving us any real information about what could be done or what ought to be done. So that's what we want to explore here.
Mr. Banks.
I guess, you know, as I'm looking at this timeline and, you know, we've mentioned that instead of December, January, so on and so forth, throughout this whole process, you know, we're still selling trees, we're still harvesting trees, we're still doing, I mean, it's an ever-changing landscape here in Clatsop County. And they're large changes, like millions of dollars. And so I guess my concern is that when we're using information from last October, there are so many landscape changes that have occurred since last October that will continue to occur through this entire process until this HCP is released. And so I feel like that's a big, you know, glaring mathematical problem when we're talking about, you know, potential departures and or lack of or smoothing out this economic line. As a county and as my co-commissioner, you know, Thompson just mentioned in chat, we're concerned about, you know, solid economics for our future, stable. We need to provide for our social services, for our sheriff departments, our rural fire, all of these things. And so I just have a lot of concerns that I don't feel like are being, I don't know, I'm concerned. But it's not a shock for you all. So there's that.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I know Mike Buffo came on. We saw his picture. And, you know, he has done a lot of work with Washington DNR and their HCP. Mike, do you have some comments?
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, just in Washington, we were working on getting a long-term conservation strategy for Marbled Murrelet and kind of going through some of the same processes that ODF is going through here. And at the same time, working on our sustainable harvest calculations, so our 10-year harvest plan. So again, some similar issues. So kind of look forward to digging in with ODF, Mark, and the counties on those issues here. But there may be some things to learn from the Washington process that can be brought down and help out here. But that is the issues of even flow, and I'm seeing in the comments here the need for adequate and stable income, though, of course, in the context of market, you know, timber being on the market price and there being variability is really, I mean, that's always the issue, is getting that revenue out to the beneficiaries as appropriate as possible, really.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that so much. I just need to tell you that Mark was so excited when to introduce you to CFTLC members because of your history and your background. And again, I'm not sure we want to see Mark go. I'm not sure we're going to let him go. But you two, I think, could be a force here over the next year and a half while Mark is thinking about retiring. we appreciate it very much. We do. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Liz, back to you.
Well, that wraps up the material we wanted to cover. A couple things to note. We'll be sending out those presentations, and Sarah put some links in the chat to get you directly to the goals. There's the draft forest management plan goals, including survey that people can engage, can dial into can also, she's saying, email her directly. And as you know, we'll be talking about these, as Commissioner Yamamoto said, we'll be talking about these at your September meeting. And then it says from Yoast to everyone here in the chat as well. So that's Andrew Yoast, also a big part of the work in front of us in terms of climate change and carbon sequestration. So he's providing a link there to that harvested wood products piece that Commissioner Yamamoto was referencing earlier. So that's there. It's a long, I think, document. Someone can correct me if I have that wrong. If there's a preference or folks would like me to email that document as well, I can do that. So just let me know if the link for some reason is a problem. So
that would be great if you could email everything to Lauren and she'll distribute it to all the CFPL team members. I would appreciate that very much.
Okay. Yeah, so we look forward to hearing from you and continuing to engage on this important work. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Liz. And Jim, thank you for being here. Do we have any other comments, questions, concerns from anybody?
So, Chair, I'll make one comment. I find myself with my affiliation with the department sometimes feeling a little bit defensive on their behalf. And I did note when John DiLorenzo mentioned the terrible effects of just one fire. And so on behalf of the department, I would want to mention the fact that we have put out 927 fires and counting so far this year. So just had to needle John a little bit on that. Sorry. Anyhow, thank you for including me.
Absolutely. No, we thank you for being here. We really do. And we understand, believe me, that forest fires are an issue. They are. I don't think there's anyone on this call that would want anyone other than the Oregon Department of Forestry fighting these fires. I mean, we've watched BLM and U.S. Forest Service struggle. We have. But again, I think John's point is with proper forest management, maybe we can even reduce that number, 900 and some fires. We can reduce that number. We're coming up on Labor Day, which is when Tillamook County experienced its fire last year. And we got it out very quickly. But we did that all on our own. We asked ODF for help, and everyone remembers last year was just a horrible fire year. And unfortunately, ODF didn't have any available crews to give us. We asked for a water drop. And again, we were told that we didn't have any aircraft or helicopters available. So after that announcement was made in Tillamook County, all of a sudden, all the timber companies and all the farmers in the area started bringing in trucks with their heavy equipment on it. And that's how we were able to make sure that Pike Road fire didn't expand. So it takes a village. It really does. But again, we appreciate ODF very much in their capability to fight fires. We do. There's no one else we would want fighting fires in Oregon.
Well, what you just described is a great example of what happens all over the state working with local organizations. So I'm glad we can end that on a positive note.
Very positive.
All right. Thank you all so much.
Okay, so I already announced our upcoming FTLAC meeting on September 17th. It'll be at the same time. Also be a Zoom meeting until we can get back in person, which who knows when that's going to be. I know all the commissioners on this call are really facing a huge surge in COVID, and that's what we're really concentrating on right now. But I appreciate everyone's attendance at this meeting today. This is important work that we're doing here also. So your continued support and engagement is going to be important. Liz, do you have anything else?
Just in terms of logistics, Leanna and Lauren, I think, will be working together on the Zoom interface. And I anticipate for the next meeting, there will not be a participant code. But we'll clean that up and make sure everyone has the appropriate information for dialing in next time.
Perfect. Appreciate that very much. Okay, again, everyone, thank you so much for being here. We will adjourn this meeting. Look at that, at 12:01 p.m. How about that? Right on time.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it very much.